Hello and welcome to Animal Companions. This is Joyce, your Radio Reading Service volunteer broadcaster, welcoming you to this edition of Animal Companions, where we read about the animals in our lives and how they affect us. Today I'll be reading a couple of chapters from Smells Like Pirates by Susan Selfors, and I'll also be reading some newsletters and some articles about the animals in our lives. We're going to start today's readings with Smells Like Pirates by Susan Selfors. In the last chapters, we learned that Lorelei and Hercules and Dog stayed behind while Homer swam to the lair. There, Madame la Directeur and Torch talked about getting Smeller's treasure at the expense of Lorelei and Homer. She had little regard for their staying alive. Chapter 25. Underwater Driving. No one really knows how many people have perished in the attempt to find Rumpelstiltskin's treasure. Treasure hunting is a dangerous activity. As Homer well knew, treasure hunters often live exciting, though abbreviated, lives. The book, The Worst Ways to End a Treasure Hunt, is all about exciting, though abbreviated, lives. In a future edition, Drake Pudding's untimely death by carnivores, tortoises, would be added. Gertrude Magnum's death by falling overboard would be added as well. If Madame la Directeur had her way, Homer and Lorelei would follow. A sick feeling rose in Homer's gut, and a sour taste filled his mouth. Maybe it was because he'd swallowed a bit of lake water while swimming, or maybe it was because he'd just overheard the uber-enemy say she was planning to get rid of him. Homer waited in the murky water, his jaw shivering, his legs itchy. Madam would be leaving soon to join Torch. Then he climbed into the submarine. Then he'd tell Lorelei that he knew she'd been working for Madam. Then he'd grab Dog and Hercules and forget all about Lorelei, forget all about their lost and found pack. He didn't need her. He was the one who'd passed the map back together. Hercules had translated the riddle. Agnes MacDougall had calculated the coordinates. Lorelei hadn't done anything. Yes, that's what he'd do. Somehow he'd leave Lorelei behind. Except for one thing, Lorelei knew the riddle and the coordinates, and she could go straight to Madam and the Torch with information. And if she went straight to Madam and Torch, they'd get rid of her. He sighed. As much as he distrusted her, she'd once been his friend, and no matter how many bad things she did, those friendship feelings were as stubborn as a herd of goats in a lettuce patch. There was no way to budge them. Homer's thoughts scattered as Madame la Directeur hurried from the back room. She changed into professional treasure hunting clothing, which looked exactly like the clothing Homer owned, so it had probably been made by Mr. Tuffletop. There was a pair of khaki shorts, a forest green shirt, a khaki vest, knee-length leech-proof socks, brown leather boots, and a leather belt with the initials M.L.D. on the buckle. She stood in front of a mirror and pulled a Panama hat over her black hair. No one would recognize her as a woman plastered on the front page of the newspaper. "Time to show those amateurs that they've met their match," she said. Then she stomped up the staircase. Her steps echoed long after she disappeared through the tortoise exit. Homer's hands trembled as he untied the submarine's mooring line. With a grunt, he climbed onto the deck. The sub was shaped like a biscuit with a thick candle sticking out of the top. The biscuit part was the sub's body, and it floated just below the water's surface. The thick candle was actually a wide metal pipe called a conning tower with a hatch on top. Homer climbed a ladder and opened the hatch. Then he climbed down another ladder into the sub's body. As he stepped off the ladder, the first thing he noticed was a gold wall plaque. And it said, "La Madame," designed by Ajitabha for Drake Horatio Pudding, to navigate the deep sea in search of treasure. The submarine had been named after Madame la Directeur. Homer scowled, reading the plaque again. Uncle Drake had once been in love with Madame, so it made sense that back in those days Ajitabha would have named the submarine after Drake's girlfriend. Homer shuddered. No way would he ever call La Madame. As soon as the quest was finished, he'd get a new plaque and rename it The Drake. The next thing he noticed was a metal tank built into the back wall. A label affixed to the tank read, "Seaweed Processing Biofuel Unit." A switch on the tank read, up for engine, down for underwater battery. Homer thought about this for a moment. Ajitaba had created a unit that sucked seaweed from the ocean and turned it into fuel. The fuel powered the engine while the submarine cruised at the surface. Then the battery took over when submerged. How very clever. A little room off the side was labeled the head. Homer knew this was a seafarer's way of saying bathroom. Another door read supply locker and another seafloor exit. Three seats were mounted at the low end at the bow, each facing a curved observation window. The middle seat had a steering wheel that looked like it had come off a tugboat. Homer sat in the pilot's seat, his gaze scanning the panel of buttons before him. Ajitaba had affixed a tidy label beneath each button, but even so, the idea of driving a submarine was daunting. It would have been much easier to have Ajitaba at the controls, but that was not going to happen. Homer was on his own, so he carefully read each of the labels until he found what he believed was the first step in the process. Engine on. When he pushed the button, it glowed green. The submarine rattled so loudly it sounded like the inside of a kettle drum, but then the noise subsided to a steady hum. As he pondered the next step, his gaze rested on the throttle that jutted from the console right next to the steering wheel. There was a similar throttle in his dad's old red truck that made the truck go forward and backward. With a tug, he pulled the throttle down. The engine roared and the submarine shot backward, slamming into the end of the Lair's pool. Homer pushed the throttle up. The engine roared and the submarine shot forward, crashing into the opposite side of the pool. Homer cringed. At this rate, he'd break the thing into pieces before leaving the Lair. It took a bit of practice, but he finally figured out how to ease the throttle into position. Gripping the wheel, he drove down the tunnel, leaving the Lair behind. When the gate came into view, Homer pulled the throttle to neutral. Then he climbed up the ladder and stuck his head out of the hatch. "Hey, Lorelei, open the gate," she did, and Homer drove the submarine into City Lake. When he climbed out of the hatch, warm August air blew across his face. "Hi, Homer," Hercules called from the paddle boat. Dog barked and wagged his tail. "You did it," Lorelei called. She pumped her legs, paddling quickly toward the sub. "You got it. Did you see Madam? Is she there?" Homer glared at the pink-haired girl in the pink jumpsuit. He wanted to yell at her, wanted to tell her he knew she'd been working with Madam. But if she knew that he knew, then she'd probably be ready for time when he'd double-cross her. He stepped onto the sub's deck. "Yeah, I saw her, but she's gone now." "Where'd she go?" "I don't know. I didn't talk to her. I was hiding." "Did she seem upset?" "I changed a bunch of things in her lair." "Did she notice?" "Oh, yeah, she noticed," Homer said. With a grunt, Dog heaved himself over the side of the paddle boat and landed on the deck next to Homer. Hercules followed and handed Homer his clothing. Then Lorelei stepped onto the deck. She gave the empty paddle boat a shove, sending it toward the far side of the lake, where the rental stand awaited. Dog peered into the water and growled at the whale shark circling the tub. "Thanks for getting Speckles," Lorelei said. "What are you going to do with him?" Homer asked. "Well, it should be easy. He'll follow us down to the river, and when we reach the ocean, he'll be free." She climbed up the ladder and disappeared through the hatch. "Can you help me get Dog up the ladder?" Homer asked Hercules. "Yeah, no problem." Hercules scooped Dog up and started up the ladder. "Do you have life jackets on board?" he asked. "I sure hope so." Before climbing back inside the submarine, Homer stood at the top of the ladder and scanned the view. More joggers had appeared on the lake's distant shore. An ice cream truck drove past crowded benches. The skyscrapers loomed beneath a blue, cloudless sky. Homer W. Pudding was about to leave the city behind and head for the ocean sea. "And am I crazy to do this?" he wondered. His uncle's voice rolled through his mind. "It is a sad truth of human history that those who dare to be different are often judged to be not quite right in the head." Homer smiled, suddenly remembering that he saw what he was thinking about, and then he began to embark on a quest while wearing only his boxers. "Maybe I'm just a little bit crazy. Hey, where's Daisy?" Lorelei's voice boomed from the bottom of the ladder. Homer glanced down the conning tower. Lorelei was holding out her arms as if the gray rat would jump into them at any moment. All that anger Homer felt toward Lorelei, that churning, pin-prickly sensation that had made his heart race and had made him feel as if he were standing in the eye of a storm, all that receded, just like a dream. "Lorelei," he said gently after he climbed down the ladder and looked into her big eyes, "I have some bad news." Chapter 26. Full Speed Ahead. As it turned out, the pin-prickly sensation that covered Homer's skin wasn't caused by his anger toward Lorelei. It was an unpleasant side effect from swimming in the city lake water. "It's not the worst rash I've ever seen," Hercules pointed out, "but if those little bumps turn into pustules, then you're going to be miserable. I sure wish I had my first aid kit." "Me too," Homer said. The mood inside the submarine was somber at best. Definitely not the sort of mood that should befall a trio of intrepid adventurers who were setting out to find the world's most coveted pirate treasure. Where was the joy, the excitement? Where was the delirious fantasy as they imagined how their lives would change? But the reality was this. While Homer sat on the submarine's floor in a state of itchy despair, Lorelei was curled up in the corner, her arms wrapped around her legs, deep in grief. Homer had delivered the news of Daisy's death, but he'd avoided the gory details, especially the shoveling whack bit. "I can't believe she's gone," Lorelei said, her lower lip trembling. Homer didn't know if he should hug Lorelei or should stand next to her and say things like, "It's going to be okay. There, there, don't cry." How do you help someone feel better when she's lost her pet rat, when she's lost the only other member of her own family? Anyone who has spent time with an animal knows that the animal can be loved as much as a person, sometimes even more. Homer knew this. Besides the obvious reason to love an animal, their cuteness, their cuddliness, their all-around appeal, animals are loyal beyond measure. They don't tell lies, they don't work out elaborate ways to double-cross you, and they most certainly don't sneak into bedrooms and steal things from secret compartments under the bed. But here's their most impressive quality. Animals accept you for who you are. They don't care if you have a blueberry-sized mole on your face. They don't care if you have to shop in the Husky Boys section at Walker's department store or if you're homeless. So when Homer's ugly rash made its appearance, Dog lay down next to him, rested his chin on Homer's lap. "Look what I found," Hercules cried from the supply locker where he'd been rooting around. He brought out a red metal box. "It's a first aid kit." Kneeling next to Homer, he opened the kit. "This isn't anything like mine." While Hercules' first aid kit was designed for those who live on land, this kit was designed for those who live underwater. Pill bottles had labels like oxygen releasers, sunlight vitamins, shark repellent. Droppers were labeled saltwater eyeball, sealer, plankton, wash away, barnacle, be gone. Tubes contained prune prevention cream for fingertips and toes, jellyfish pheromones, octopus anti-suction ointment. "Hey, this might work," Hercules said as he opened a tube. "It says it's a gel for jellyfish stings." He squeezed a glob into Homer's palm. The goo was green and smelled like something one of the farm dogs might have rolled in, but Homer didn't care. If the itching lasted one more minute, he'd rip his skin right off. So he spread the gel all over his legs, arms, belly, and neck. Hercules applied it to Homer's back. The relief was instantaneous. "Thank you," Homer said after a long, happy sigh. Skin soothed and boxers dried, Homer dressed in his jeans and plaid shirt. He stayed barefoot because it didn't make much sense to wear shoes on a submarine. Lorelei and Hercules had taken off their shoes, too. Hercules found a box of rations in the storage locker. He, Homer, and Dog each ate 3 energy bars. "I'm not hungry," Lorelei mumbled. She turned away and rested her face against a small porto. Homer knelt beside Dog and whispered in his ear, "Go sit with Lorelei. Go cheer her up." He gave Dog's rump a push. Dog waddled across the sub and with a grunt lay across Lorelei's feet. Homer always appreciated that same gesture on cold mornings. Dog made the best slippers in the world. But Lorelei turned away from Dog. "Leave me alone. I'm too sad to pet you," she mumbled. "What do we do now?" Hercules asked as he closed the first aid kit. Homer wasn't sure how to cheer up Lorelei, so he turned his thoughts back to the quest. "I guess we'd better start driving this thing." The autopilot mechanism wasn't too difficult to figure out. Homer typed in the destination coordinates. The control panel screen lit up. Point A represented their current location. Point B represented their destination. A black dot, which represented the submarine itself, began to pulse. Homer took the pilot's seat. Hercules took the seat at Homer's right, his seat belt tightly buckled. Speckles swam in and out of view as they made their way to the river that fed City Lake. It wasn't a wild, churning river with jutting rocks and grizzly bears pawing at spawning salmon. City River had been dammed up so that it was formed a wide, calm waterway, perfect for the delivery of goods from all over the world. "Watch out!" Hercules cried as a tugboat honked its horn. Homer was about to yank the steering wheel, but the autopilot did it for him, avoiding a collision. "It's crowded," Homer said with surprise. They passed barges carrying lumber. A ship stacked with huge metal containers sat at the dock, where an orange crane unloaded the cargo into a waiting truck. As a cruise ship glided past, its passengers leaned over the railing and stared at the strange submarine. Sailboats, speedboats, and fishing boats joined the parade. Speckles appeared now and then, circling the sub like a border collie. "Hey, I think he's guiding us," Homer said. When they reached the junction of the river and the ocean, the waves grew choppy, and after a few minutes of turbulence, the water calmed, and brilliant blue spread before them all the way to the horizon. "Wow," Hercules said. "Look, Lorelei, it's the ocean." But Lorelei didn't look. The seaweed processing biofuel unit began to hum, and as it did, the fuel meter changed from half full to nearly full. "It must be sucking in seaweed," Homer said, "and turning it into fuel."
"Cool," Hercules said.
What was really cool was seeing above and below the water at the same time. Schools of fish swam past, darting and weaving in a synchronized dance. Seagulls rested on the surface, their orange feet gently treading water. Speckles swam in the water, and his red ball balanced on his nose. Then he stopped and stared into the distance. A shudder ran through his body. Was he hearing the call of the vast ocean? He'd lived in a zoo all his life. Was he feeling the thrill of freedom? His ball forgotten, Speckles darted off, his tail waving as if to say goodbye. "I think Speckles is leaving," Homer said.
"What?"
Lorelei pushed Dog aside and darted to her feet. "Speckles!" She rapped her knuckles on the glass louder and louder. "Speckles! Don't leave without saying goodbye! Speckles!" The whale shark turned around and swam back. He circled the sub, then pressed an eye against the glass right where Lorelei stood. "Go," she whispered with a trembling voice. "Go. Be free." She waved sadly. Speckles circled one last time. Then his massive polka-dot body gradually faded into the distance. And if he turned into water, Lorelei said, "I bet he's happy." "Yeah, I bet he is," Homer agreed. "Have a good life," Lorelei said quietly. Then she sat in the other seat, her bare feet resting on the console. "If you drive this slowly, we'll never get there." "I've got the throttle pushed all the way forward," Homer explained. "Well, it's not fast enough," Lorelei complained, folding her arms. "We have to go faster." Even though Homer was glad Lorelei was no longer grieving in the corner, he didn't entirely welcome the reunion with her bossy side. "How am I supposed to go faster?" he asked. "Well, what about this?" Hercules asked as he opened a small compartment on the console. Inside, a button was labeled Hyperspeed. "Hyper is a Greek word," Hercules said. "It means excessive." "Hyper works for me." Lorelei reached out with her finger, put Homer at dis-ease, but Homer grabbed her wrist. "Oh, shouldn't we talk about this?" he asked. "That sounds really fast. While it was reassuring to have the autopilot at the helm, what would happen if the autopilot failed?" Lorelei was a city girl. Hercules lived in the gated community. Homer was a farm boy. Not a drop of sea blood could be found in any of her veins. "Maybe we should rethink this." Lorelei raised her eyebrows and stared at Homer. Hercules nervously fiddled with the hem of his shirt. Dog snorted. "Rethink? Are you serious?" He was serious. They were about to do something very dangerous, and danger was not Homer's middle name. But then again, everything he'd done since his uncle's death had led up to this moment. Lorelei and Hercules watched Homer carefully, waiting for his response. He closed his eyes, filling his mind with an image of Uncle Drake. "You can do this," his uncle's voice whispered. "You're my nephew. You're a pudding through and through." Homer's eyes flew open, and he smacked his hand on his thigh. "Let's do it."
He reached out and grabbed the button, and then he jabbed it. It was just like one of those science fiction movies where the captain says, "Warp speed ahead!" The view through the observation window went blurry as the submarine jolted forward. Homer and Lorelei, who'd forgotten to fasten their seatbelts, tumbled out of their seats, ending up on the floor in a tangle of arms and legs. Dog, who didn't have the luxury of a seatbelt, flew across the sub and landed on Homer's chest. Wham! It was pretty much like having a meteor fall from the sky. Homer wheezed as his breath shot from his lungs. After checking to make sure Dog wasn't hurt, Homer looked out the observation window. Wow, we're really moving. The submarine cut and jumped across the sea's surface like a dolphin gone berserk. I think I'm getting seasick, Hercules announced. Really, really seasick. Somebody better get me a bag or something. Dog lay on his side and moaned. His tongue hung out like a discarded dish rag. Homer's stomach went in a knot, and a cloud of dizziness swaddled his head. I'm getting seasick, too. I bet the ride would be smoother if we went below, Lorelei said. Below? The word squeaked out of Hercules' mouth. You got it, Lorelei said as she strapped herself into the seat. This is a submarine, remember? She punched the button labeled Submersion. Engine off, battery on, and down, down, down they went. The ride immediately settled to a smooth swoosh. The black dot on the autopilot screen blipped steadily, following its preordained path. The seasickness abated. Time passed, fatigue settled over the crew, except for Dog. No one had slept since the little naps in the Office of Celestial Navigation. Hercules slid his notebook under his head and stretched out on the floor. We'll take shifts, Lorelei said. You sleep first. Although Homer didn't trust her, his eyelids were heavy and his brain felt foggy. He curled up on the floor and tucked a life vest under his head. The humming of the battery, the gentle snores from Dog, and the congested wheezing from Hercules created a soothing floating melody. Homer drifted away until it felt as if his body were as liquid as the sea. Next week, we'll read what happens as they go drifting along the sea. In Chapter 27, The Treasure's Queen, in Smells Like Pirates, written by Susan Selfors. Well, we all know that dogs can really help us to relax and to feel good. And this article, written by Jay Croft, underscores those ideas. Playing with dogs helps people concentrate and relax. A new study gets specific about the health benefits of interacting with a dog. The study found that walking a dog relaxes people, brushing a dog improves concentration, and playing with a pooch does both. In the study, 30 adults wore headsets with electrodes that measured their brain waves while they interacted with a 4-year-old poodle named Aro. The adults participated in 8 activities with the dog, and each activity lasted 3 minutes. The activities were meeting, playing, feeding, massaging, grooming, photographing, hugging, and walking. Study participants completed surveys after each activity about how they felt emotionally. Previous studies of the potential benefits of animal interaction often take a holistic approach, comparing people's mood or hormone levels before and after spending time with a dog. Anyu Yu, the study's author and researcher at Konkuk University in South Korea, said it is a significant finding that engaging in certain activities with dogs can increase specific brain activity. Participants said they were less stressed, tired, and depressed after each activity. Alpha brain waves grew stronger when participants played with Aro and walked her. Alpha waves indicate stability and relaxation, and the results suggest better rest and relaxation were experienced by the participants. Beta brain waves, which are associated with attention and concentration, became stronger when participants played with Aro, brushed her, or gave her a gentle massage, a sign that people's concentration improved without an increase in stress. Massaging the dog, giving her treats, and hugging her also improved participants' mood. Participants said they were also comfortable while walking Aro and felt relaxed while massaging her. Jay Croft wrote the article, Playing with Dogs Helps People Concentrate and Relax. And we'll have our final reading about various authors and their thoughts about cats. Jules Verne said, I believe cats to be spirits come to earth. A cat, I am sure, could walk on a cloud without coming through. Margaret Benson, author and Egyptologist, said, "The cat is above all things a dramatist." And Mark Twain said, "If man could be crossed with a cat, it would improve man, but it would deteriorate the cat." Aldous Huxley said, "If you want to be a psychological novelist and write about human beings, the best thing you can do is to keep a pair of cats." Ernest Hemingway, the major cat lover, said, "A cat has absolute emotional honesty. Human beings, for one reason or another, may hide their feelings, but a cat does not." And William S. Burroughs said, "The cat does not offer services. The cat offers itself. Of course, he wants care and shelter. You don't buy love for nothing. Like all pure creatures, cats are definitely practical." And Charles Bukowski said, "If you're feeling bad, you just look at the cats. You'll feel better because they know that everything is just as it is. There's nothing to get excited about. They just know. They're saviors." And Ursula K. Le Guin said, "Cats know exactly where they begin and end. When they walk slowly out the door that you are holding open for them and pause, leaving their tail just an inch or two inside the door, they know it. They know you have to keep holding the door open." And finally, Eckhart Tolle said, "I have lived with several Zen masters, all of them cats." Well, we've come to the conclusion of Animal Companions for today. I do hope you've enjoyed the readings, and I invite you back again next time to hear more stories about the animals in our lives. Until then, this is Joyce for Animal Companions and for Sun Sounds of Arizona, a radio reading service. Be well, everyone. Stay healthy. Be happy. Bye-bye.